Good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us for this call. My name is Leslie Dach. I'm the chair of Protect Our Care. I also served as the senior counselor to the Secretary of Health and Human Services in the last few years of the Obama administration and was the department's global Ebola coordinator during that time. As we're having this call today, an additional 1.5 million Americans have filed for unemployment benefits. Corona cases in America have topped 2 million. More than 110,000 Americans have died, and almost 1,000 Americans are dying every day, the equivalent of 3 airplane crashes every single day. While this administration has turned its back on the crisis and continues to encourage people to abandon social distancing and even simple precautions like wearing a mask. Today, we're going to focus particularly on how this toxic brew is affecting people in Florida, Texas, and Arizona, 3 states with surges in both cases and deaths. I want to thank Representative Shalala Allred, former acting CMS Administrator Andy Slavitt, and Will Humble, the Executive Director of the Arizona Public Health Association, for joining us. I now want to introduce Zach Pacanis, the Director of Protect Our Care's Coronavirus War Room, who's been leading an effort across a broad array of health and allied community groups on the policy and political issues surrounding this crisis. Zach will make some opening remarks and moderate the remainder of the call and our Q&A. Zach, thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you so much, Leslie, and thank you for the speakers today from Florida and Texas and Arizona and others. We are in a crisis, and what the speakers have in common today is that they are watching things get really bad in their state and across the country. After Donald Trump rushed to reopen states against the advice of medical experts, the coronavirus is now surging across the country as the United States passes 2 million infections. Hospitalizations in at least 9 states have been on the rise since Memorial Day, and more than a dozen states in Puerto Rico are recording their highest averages of new cases since the pandemic began. What we're seeing right now is not part of some second wave. It's a continuation of the first wave. And so while some people may have gotten bored with the virus certainly hasn't gotten bored with us. And before our speakers talk about how the coronavirus is still an emergency in their states and across the country, I want to set the table a little bit on why things have gotten this bad. The answer is Donald Trump and his failure to control the spread of the virus, both early on and today. Early on, he spent months downplaying the crisis. He refused to listen to experts when he should have been preparing for the virus, and he should have been taking decisive action to stop its spread. He allowed the U.S. to fall behind on testing compared to other countries like South Korea. He contributed to medical supply shortages at hospitals that hampered our response. You'll recall that he allowed State Department planes to transport 18 tons of personal protective equipment to China, forcing nurses and doctors to wear bandanas due to mask shortages. And he endangered people's lives by pushing junk science contradicted by medical experts, like injecting poisonous disinfectants into your veins to combat coronavirus. Unfortunately, it's clear that Donald Trump hasn't learned from his mistakes, and his actions and words today are actually making things worse. The White House has halted its daily coronavirus task force briefings. The COVID-19 task force has scaled back its once daily meetings. There is still no plan to ramp up testing and tracing across the country. And most concerning of all, Trump is continuing his rush to reopen states like Texas and Florida and Arizona against the advice of medical experts. I mean, just to remind you, he allowed social distancing guidelines to expire on May 1st, and many states responded by reopening. And we are living with the consequences of that decision today as we see the surges of the new cases, the deaths, and the economic toll. We need real leadership, which is what brings me to introduce our next speaker, Congresswoman Donna Shalala from Florida, someone who is leading the charge on combating the coronavirus as a key member of the Coronavirus Congressional Oversight Commission. Congresswoman?
Thank you very much. Here's the simple message. We have failed as a nation, and Donald Trump has failed us to have a coherent national strategy using public health, the information from public health experts. We have the world-class experts in our midst at the NIH, at CDC, which has totally been mugged, as far as I can tell, at the FDA. We have the experts. We've been paying them for years and investing in them. But the president has refused to take the role that the federal government ought to take, and that is to lead. He has left it to the states. He's left it to the hospitals, with everybody competing against each other, and with the states being subject to tremendous pressure from their business community to reopen, despite the fact that public health experts have told them they have to be extremely careful in the process. Governor DeSantis in Florida has been pushing the state of Florida to reopen. On Friday, the state entered a new stage of reopening, and the number of new coronaviruses reported in my own state each day has increased on an average of roughly 46% over the past week. We've been averaging 1,111 new cases every day, and my own district in Miami-Dade, I represent most of Miami, has been suffering the worst. In addition to that, we have not targeted nursing homes where the vast majority of our deaths are in our state, which is an absolute tragedy, and we do not have in place a coherent strategy for testing workers that are being asked to go back to work. But it's basically Donald Trump's virus and his lack of a coherent national strategy that has produced more deaths and more despair and more unevenness between the states than one could have imagined. If you ever wanted to know what a difference leadership makes, this is a life and death situation. And the president has failed us at every stage of this virus. Thank you, and I guess I yield to my colleague, Representative Allard from Texas.
Well, thank you, Donna. And this is Congressman Colin Allred from the Texas 32nd District. I represent parts of Dallas, Richardson, Garland, the suburbs that are north and northeast of Dallas. And I really want to thank Congresswoman Shalala for her leadership. I always say that she is overqualified to be in Congress. She has been an invaluable asset to all of us from her time leading the Department of Health and Human Services and the other organizations that she has led. And I, of course, want to thank Protect Our Care for highlighting these critically important issues. And, you know, today is a good day for us to be speaking about these issues because President Trump is visiting Dallas and coming to my district. And it's important that we highlight Texas is one of at least 14 states that have recorded their highest ever seven-day average of new coronavirus cases since the pandemic began, and we've been seeing record numbers of hospitalizations being reported across the state. Here in Dallas County, we've set new daily records with 300 new cases just yesterday, a new record for us, and with more than 2 weeks straight of 200 or more cases being reported. Dallas County now ranks in the top five hotspots in the nation for new cases, according to the data provided by Johns Hopkins University. And I've been clear since the beginning that we needed to be guided by data and by the experts as we reopen parts of our economy. That's not only what's best for our public health, it's also what's best for our economy as we seek to restore consumer confidence and give folks the confidence that they can engage in their economy without risking their lives or someone in their family's life. Experts here in Texas and around the country produce guidelines and plans to do just that. The CDC and even this White House's own coronavirus task force, as well as other local experts, have created recommendations that have been ignored in Texas, and we are now seeing the predictable outcome of those decisions. But it's not too late for us to change course. I have long advocated that for us to continue to reopen safely and to restore confidence, we need to have a much more aggressive and comprehensive plan in place to test, trace, treat and isolate COVID as other nations around the world have been successful doing. In May, we in the House voted on the HEROES Act, which provided the funds for us to be able to do that. It included $75 billion for us to dramatically ramp up our testing, tracing, and treatment capabilities. That, of course, was nearly a month ago, and with no action in the Senate and no leadership coming from this White House, we need to act in order to save lives and get our economy back on track. This really doesn't have to be a partisan issue. There was a plan that's been put forward by Andy Slavitt, of course, who's with us, and also with by Dr. Gottlieb, Scott Gottlieb, the former head of the FDA in the Trump administration, proposing that Congress do just what I just mentioned, to spend billions of dollars for us to dramatically ramp up our contact tracing workforce, to use vacant hotel rooms to help folks who have been infected and exposed to be able to self-isolate and to provide them with a per diem as they are doing that. And I've said this many times, but it illustrates why this virus has caused so much damage. Texas has the highest uninsured rate in the country. And due to the inaction of our state leaders on health care, most glaringly our refusal, continuing refusal to expand Medicaid, Texas has an inequitable health system with hugely uneven outcomes and high costs. And this has a disproportionate impact on minority communities and women who overwhelmingly make up our essential workforce. In Dallas County, Latinos now make up more than 60% of coronavirus cases, and over 80% of our hospitalizations for those who report employment have been critical infrastructure workers. And of course, as my colleague Donna mentioned, in our nursing homes, we've seen just terrible outcomes with more than 46,000 deaths nationally. They're also making up a significant percentage of the deaths that we're seeing here in Dallas County, showing that we have to have a comprehensive plan, not only to protect our workers, but also our most vulnerable communities. And finally, we cannot forget that in the middle of this crisis, the worst that we've ever faced in our modern history, the administration is seeking to gut the Affordable Care Act and to kick millions of Americans off of their health care. Since my first day in Congress, I've fought to protect the progress we've made with the Affordable Care Act. I introduced and passed a measure with bipartisan support authorizing the House to help fight the cynical partisan lawsuit that's seeking to gut the Affordable Care Act and with it the protections for people with pre-existing conditions and the Medicaid expansion that, of course, my state has refused to do but so many other states have. You know, when I talk to North Texans, this is really not a political issue. Folks want us to work together to beat this virus. We need policies that prioritize our public health and will allow us to restore our economy. We cannot separate the two. Our public health and our economy are intertwined. And until we get a vaccine or a therapeutic, the best way for us to do that is to put in place a national strategy to not ignore what is happening and to make sure that we protect the most vulnerable around us. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Congressman Allred. With that, I'd like to introduce Andy Slavitt, who is a champion of public health and an expert and the former acting administrator for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Andy?
Thank you. I won't take up too much time to leave time for questions. I'll just make a couple of points that emphasize what's been said already by the congresspeople. And I want to, of course, thank Protect Our Care for continuing to draw our attention to an issue at a time when body counts are rising and it feels as if people are no longer paying attention, or certainly not nearly as much attention as those folks who have given so much to our country deserve. I think other countries have demonstrated a couple of things. One is that you can create a strategy to live with coronavirus in a closer to normal state and still not lose the lives of our friends, neighbors, colleagues, and family members. And those countries have done this by putting together any one of a number of very useful strategies. The Czech Republic has done it by using broad mask wearing, Hong Kong with hand washing, Vietnam with testing, New Zealand with a color-coded system. And indeed, our White House and Dr. Birx have put together a plan which was a reasonable plan on how to open the country up safely. Unfortunately, it hasn't been followed. And while I would say on the one hand that the coronavirus is an apolitical bug and therefore there's no reason to emphasize politics, on the other hand, our response is something we control. And it's been incredibly disappointing to the world and shocking to the world that we are turning our backs on so many of the people in this country that haven't yet been in the spotlight for hotspots for the coronavirus. I would remind people that the vast majority of the world, and indeed the country, have not yet had the coronavirus enter their communities yet. That is just starting to begin again, and this is not a time, because of the simple fact that the stock market is up, for the president to declare victory. We can have a safe, open, gradual economies, and we can do it in a healthy and safe way, but we have to be willing to invest in the tools, and we need to be willing to lead the public in understanding how we can stay together on this. And unfortunately, the president has chosen a campaign of division and to essentially ignore what's going on in the country. And several of the governors in some of the states that are on this call today have unfortunately taken their cues very much in that direction. And it doesn't have to be that way. You know, they didn't invent the virus. They are not the cause of the virus. They do, however, control the things that will allow us to minimize the death toll and open the economy safely. And it is unspeakable to me that they're unwilling to do this. So thank you to everybody on this call for calling attention to this.
Thank you so much, Mr. Slavitt. And with that, we were going to have Will Humble, the executive director for the Arizona Public Health Association, on, who actually just got on the call. So,
yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Take it away.
All right. So sorry I missed the rest of the program. So I don't know where you were in terms of what you were talking about. If you want, I'd just kind of give a summary of what's happening here in Arizona and sort of an analysis of what we could do to head things off from where we are right now. So, Arizona had a really successful stay-at-home order. We had good compliance across the board. It was effective. People were cooperating, and we saw good results. I mean, we had, we were slowing the spread of the virus, and things were going actually quite well. And the governor ended, and I think the governor was actually making good decisions up until early May. But then when the stay-at-home order was lifted, which it was sort of a phased lifting, and was gone for good on May 15th, it was really replaced with essentially nothing. We had a good, strong stay-at-home order, but then it was replaced by, please do the right thing, please follow the CDC guidelines, but there was no compliance system in place, no enforcement, and so there are some businesses that are doing the right thing, but many are just ignoring the CDC guidelines, and there's no compliance or enforcement. So that's, I think, the biggest problem, and that can be rectified, by the way. Another thing is that the executive order that ended the stay-at-home order prohibits cities, local jurisdictions, from doing anything on their own in terms of mitigation measures. And so dealing with, nightclub events or, things at the local level, cities are really good at, intervening. They're good at coming up with, mitigation plans and can actually execute. But the governor is prohibiting cities from doing those things. And so I think that's a missed opportunity for some additional mitigation here in Arizona. And another thing I think that is underappreciated is the role that assisted living and skilled nursing facilities are playing, not just in Arizona, but across the whole country. At least in Arizona, when you look at the data, 70% of the deaths are people coming out of skilled nursing facilities. And our state health department doesn't disclose the percentage of cases that are coming out of those congregate settings. But when you read between the lines, it's easy to see that this is a big problem. And there's been little, if anything, done in terms of interventions at the state level to deal with it. So, for example, Arizona has been doing these things called testing blitzes, where there's drive-through testing on Saturdays, where they do 10,000, 20,000 tests. In my opinion, those tests would have been better used in assisted living and skilled nursing facilities, both for staff, who are the ones bringing the virus into the facilities, but also for the residents and patients. And so a more organized effort around assisted living and skilled nursing would, I think, go a long way towards slowing the number of inpatient folks that are coming into our hospitals, which have dwindling capacity with every day that goes by. I've got two more things and I'll stop talking. Another thing is that when the stay-at-home order ended, it ended before the county health departments had mature contact tracing programs. And, you know, contact testing and contact tracing go hand in hand. And if you open your economy and invite new cases before your county health departments have the capacity to do that contact tracing, you're setting yourself up for failure. And I think that is one of the things, that is one of the factors among the things I already talked about that's putting us behind the eight ball. And then finally, many states have a requirement that people wear cloth masks when they're out in public. And Arizona is a very soft, do it if you'd like, please do it, in fact, but there's no compliance, there's no real expectation. You know, most businesses have their staff wearing cloth masks or other kinds of masks, but, you know, customers by and large, there's no expectation except for certain kinds of businesses. And so that's another missed opportunity. So there, I've just pointed out five things that we could do right now that would make a real difference. But it looks, at least to me right now, that, you know, appears that our elected official isn't interested in doing those things. We'll see. There's another press conference today, and hopefully this new data will be compelling.
Thank you so much, Will, for that update. And with now I'd like to open up the call for questions, Q&A.
Yep. At this time, if there's questions for any of our speakers, please press *3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue. Again, if you have a question for one of our speakers, please press *3 on your phone. All right, our first question is going to come from Tom Benning at the Dallas Morning News. Tom, you are
hi,
live.
Thanks for doing this. Oh, great. Thanks for doing this call. This question is for Congressman Allred. Given some of the data that you cited about what's happening in Texas and in Dallas and Dallas County specifically as it relates to the coronavirus, how appropriate do you think it is for President Trump to be visiting North Texas today? Especially, primarily for a fundraising and campaign-related activity.
Well, thank you, Tom. I find it to be insulting to the people in Texas who can't get tested for COVID, for the long-term care facilities that are still experiencing these crises, for our essential workers who are making up such a high percentage of our hospitalizations, not only for the president to be coming to Dallas for a fundraiser, but to be making sure that everyone who gets into that fundraiser does have a COVID test. And to me, if we're able to do that for people coming to the White House or coming to a fundraiser for the president, then we should be able to do that for workers going to their workplace, for people who are trying to engage in the economy, for small business owners who are desperately trying to save their small businesses, for our long-term care facilities where we're seeing such an incredibly high percentage of our deaths happening. To me, it's just a slap in the face to Texans and to people across the country who are still struggling for this because of our failure to have a national strategy and a national plan. And Dallas County and Texas cannot handle this on our own. We need to have a national plan around this. It requires international supply chains that require actual leadership and the ability to pull together complicated and multinational supply chain to provide the testing and PPE necessary. And we have failed to do that. And for him to be coming to Dallas now to raise money, also while FEMA is denying Dallas critical funds that we need to recover from the tornado, I find it to be insulting for everybody in North Texas.
Thank you.
All right, again, if there's any questions for our speakers, please press *3 on your phone. Again, that's *3 if you have any questions. All right, Zach, it looks like that's all the questions we have for today. So I'm going to toss it back to, oh, Hold on 1 second here. All right, we have a question from Dan Chang at the Miami Herald. Dan, you are live.
Hi, thanks for hosting this event and taking my question. My question is perhaps for Representative Shalala about Florida. As you mentioned, we've seen the number of daily cases have been rising steadily, and the CDC and the White House's gating criteria for reopening says that you know, you should have a declining trend of cases, yet we're moving ahead, as you mentioned, with reopening. I feel like the public is getting mixed messages. What can you say to them that will help them at least get some clarity about what's happening?
Well, that's exactly what the problem is. We do not have a coherent national strategy with consistent messages. But the message originally that came out of the White House in the strategy that was put forward by the public health experts is that you had to have a downward trend for 14 days. In other words, you had to starve the virus for at least 14 days so that you had a downward trend. And, you know, very few states have had that, even though they have started to open up without that. The least we could have done in Florida is to focus on nursing homes and assisted living facilities to prevent deaths. And by not paying attention to the places where we had the most vulnerable population, to at least get our arms around preventing people from dying is just unfathomable. What we need, when I talk about a coherent national strategy, that means everybody has the same talking points and everyone has the same execution with differences for the differences in the states, but the messages have to be the same, that we have to wear masks, that we have to wash our hands, that we have to continue social distancing, and that we have to test, and that we have to focus our testing both on the nursing homes and assisted living facilities, but also on the businesses that are opening up. A restaurant in Florida should not open up unless they've tested their employees. Our grocery stores have not tested all of their employees. Without doing that and having the kind of contact tracing, once you get some manageable number, I mean, we're going to continue to see these spikes. I do not believe that we're going to drive it down and then see spikes. I think this virus is just going to continue, and it's continue in a very deadly manner. We know what to do. The public health people have been consistent and clear, but the failure of our political leaders to listen to them has left it to local leaders who are trying desperately to do both.
Thank you, Congressman. Andy Slava, do you want to add anything to that question or the question before?
I would be very hesitant to try to speak after Congresswoman Shalala, who has an incredible grasp both of the public health situation, the situation on the ground in Florida. You know, other than to say she's exactly right. This moment doesn't call for a political response. It calls for leadership, patience, and consistently executing what we set out to start. If we had done that, we can absolutely contain the virus in cases. People around the world have shown that. So I think what the Congresswoman's pointing out is it's not that complicated. You just have to do what you say you're going to do and see it through. And that's what's so frustrating when we see people losing their lives. It feels very needless.
All right, that's all the questions that we have for today. So, Zach, I'm going to toss it back to you for some final closing remarks.
No, thank you all so much for joining us, both the press, as well as Congresswoman Shalala, Congressman Allred, Will Humble, and Andy Slavitt for your remarks. I mean, the point of this is that we are still in the first wave. We are still facing emergency in the state. Cases are spiking. It's Florida, in Texas, in Arizona, places across the country, and there simply is no strategy to address it. And in fact, what's coming out of this White House is simply making it worse. And so unless anyone has anything else from the call that they'd like to say, we'll close it here.